Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide.
Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we make old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and I'm excited tonight, guys, for multiple reasons. First and foremost, I am joined tonight by Harmony Ginger, someone who you all know and love from the universe of the T-shirted Historian. We're going to have a great conversation about RPG journeys. I'm excited to have this discussion with her. I think it's going to be really interesting. But also, not to bury the lead here tonight, I do have some pretty exciting news here for anyone who doesn't already know this. My very first Kickstarter campaign is live. And so far, it's been up since 11 o'clock Central Time. We are but a stone's throw away from hitting our funding goal within the first 24 hours. I know there's a lot of Kickstarters going on right now. There's a lot that's competing for people's wallets. Times are lean. I don't like asking people for money, but guys, we're right there. Wonky and I have been working very, very hard on this. We appreciate any support that you guys throw to us. And of course, if you can get us funded within 24 hours, I will be eternally grateful to you guys. But, you know, this is live. It's happening right now. I'm going to drop the link here in chat for you guys to see. And, you know, those of you who are watching after the fact, you will still be able to back this. Hopefully, by the time you're seeing this, we're fully funded, which I would be excited for. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Of course, I want to, you know, remind everyone of all the usual stuff that you can find me on X and Instagram at Howard_RyanGreg. YouTube is Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And Substack is RollinBones.substack.com. I've been kind of absent from everything right now just because I'm trying to get the finishing touches put on this project here. But I will have a Substack article coming out sometime tomorrow, so you guys will be able to see that. It'll be talking about Kickstarter, not specifically my Kickstarter, but kind of my general thoughts on Kickstarter. So you can look forward to that. And you can also buy Rollin' Bones merch over on TeePublic. The link here will be in chat or pinned underneath this video. That's it for me right now, guys. That's all of my shilling done. So let's go ahead and bring on the person that you guys are all here to see. She has really kind of made a name for herself as part of T-shirted Historians community. You guys know her and love her. She's a ton of fun and, you know, a really cool person. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rollin' Bones for the very first time. Harmony Ginger, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. I didn't think I was the kind of person you wanted to have on normally, but that's fine. I'm learning stuff about myself. I don't know. I don't have Kickstarters going. I don't have any like actual projects that I'm that I have out there. I just more kind of tag along and leech off t-shirted historians fame mostly. Fame? Yeah,
that's
whatever.
Fair.
Just leech off him.
He's here now. Don't
No.
T-shirted. I hear thunder outside, which is exactly what happened last time the power went out. So
Don't
do this to me. Don't do this to me, T-shirted. Not tonight.
It's Dunder Moose. I like Dunder Moose.
Here's Dunder Moose. What's up, man? Do you in fact crash into toilets on the freeway?
Yes. Actually, I was in a car accident about maybe 6 months ago. Actually, 3 or 4 months ago, I was going down the freeway and there was a toilet truck in front of me, and they lost a toilet, and I thought I was about to die to a toilet. That truly happened. But yes, I hit a toilet on the freeway.
Ugh.
It was in October.
Have you ever seen the movie The Spirit?
No.
It's not very good, so don't take this as a recommendation. But there's a scene in the movie, Samuel L. Jackson is playing the villain, and he hits the hero, the spirit, over the head with a toilet. And he goes, "What? Toilets is always funny."
It's true. I was like, I'm always to die. But thankfully, I'm still here. I did not die to a toilet on the freeway. And the toilet truck didn't even realize that they lost a toilet. So, like, I was, like, pulling up next to him. And I was, like, shouting at him that he's losing toilets. Oh, God. It was a... Oh. Yeah. Car still dented. Anyway.
Not fun.
Drop the toilet talk. That was a thing that happened to me.
It came from a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Not fun. Anyway, I wanted to start this interview a little bit differently. There's a question that I used to ask everyone that came on the show because I was always curious about it. Apparently, it's a question a lot of people get tired of being asked and, you know, get tired of hearing people answer. But tonight, we're here to talk about our RPG journeys. And so I'm going to open with this question once again. How did you get into role-playing games?
I wasn't allowed to play them when I was growing up because I was in a very Southern Baptist household and it was the devil. So I wasn't allowed to play them, but, which is why I wanted to play them. Like I would not have ever gotten into it. I would have thought it was dumb nerd stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except my mom specifically sat me down one day and said, "I know you hang out with nerdy people. I hope you guys aren't playing Dungeons and Dragons because because we're gonna have to talk to the pastor if you are." And I was like, "No, but I want to now." So anyway, as soon as I turned 18, as soon as I left home, I joined a Dungeons and Dragons group. We played, I think it was 3.5. Yeah, it was 3.5. And I played through a bunch of 3.5 campaigns. I played through one fourth edition campaign and then some more 3.5 campaigns and went to fifth edition. And I'm going to be honest, and I don't know what your audience is going to think about this. I've never played anything else aside from 3.5, fourth and fifth edition. As far as Dungeons and Dragons go, I've played Pathfinder and a few others, but I haven't really played any of the AD&D except for, I believe I was in one session of one, but that was a long time ago. So I got started because I wasn't allowed to.
That's fair. Sounds like your story is not all that dissimilar from mine. Wow. My parents, I also grew up in a very religious household and still am very religious myself, but my parents never went for all the like such and such is the devil stuff. But one day when I was about 16, 17 years old, I mentioned to my mom, "I want to play D&D. You know, I'm looking for people to play D&D with." My mom freaked out.
Ooh.
Like, oh, seriously, my parents, like Harry Potter was completely fine. That wasn't one of the things that my parents got hung up on that a lot of like evangelicals of my era were, you know, worried about. Literally like nothing that was quote unquote satanic ever bothered my parents. But for some reason, D&D was the line that I couldn't cross. And even, you know, a couple years later when I was in college, I told my parents, you know, "I'm going to someone's house and we're going to play D&D. My mom thought that I was literally going to like some kind of black mass or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was same story here. Like Harry Potter, that was fine. We understood it was fake. Pokemon, yeah, it's fine. But when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons, like you could actually summon a devil with that. That's my mom was like so against it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I similar story, yeah. But I was about 18, 19 when I started.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so like were you playing during the time where third like 3.5 was D&D essentially, or was this a little bit after? Okay.
No, 3.5 was it. I'm older than I look.
I assumed you were my age. I hope. So
I'm 34.
I'm 28.
Okay. Well.
So you're my wife's age.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Anyway. Wonderful. Aside from making you reveal your age on my show.
No, that's okay. I'm not sensitive about it.
That's all good. But yeah, I like T-shirt says, I decided to jump in with both feet. I mean, it wasn't, to me, the danger, the quote unquote danger of role-playing games was not the thing that attracted me to it. To be brutally honest, it's because I was a dirty theater kid and I wanted to pretend to be a warrior. And that's pretty much immediately what happened. I went and role played with a bunch of strangers who I met on the internet, and they were kind of blown away by how like naturally I took to this like style of role play where I thought of myself as my character. And from there, like that was the addiction. That's what hooked me, was like, instead of having to go through a whole audition process and be on stage and stuff like that, I could have a little bit of theater there with me. And this is that, like, yeah, dirty theater kid jokes here in the chat. I see it, but like, this is exactly like how I got into role playing and then found out that it's a little bit different than that. So it's interesting how these things kind of like can be similar to each other. It's weird like that.
Yeah, that wasn't it for me. I hated theater. My dad was a local theater director, so I hated it. But that wasn't it for me. For me, I just really liked Lord of the Rings and things like it. I read a lot of I read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi when I was in high school, and I didn't even know what D&D was. I thought it was like Lord of the Rings, the board game. It was like Lord of the Rings, but I got to be Frodo. Like that's what I thought it was. I didn't realize there was that people like acted in it. In my first couple campaigns, like it was nobody like used their character's voice. We described our actions and stuff. We would say like, you know, my character does this. It wasn't like it was my character. So that came later. Like I didn't really see that much until like I was playing fourth edition. My fourth edition game, there was like a theater kid that jumped in and was like doing all that. And I'm like, what's with this weird nerd? And like, now we all do it. So yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that you kind of revealed to me before we came on the show here that really interested me, I think a lot of people, and I'll like be blatant with this, I think a lot of people see, because you're a woman in the space, that you are coming at gaming from kind of the perspective that I'm coming from, this like pseudo theater background. What was interesting to me about your story is you were coming at it from a like strategic point of view. In a lot of ways, you were coming at it from like board games and kind of a more tactical approach to it. So talk a little bit about that.
Right. So I had about a 4 or 5 year span where I didn't really play any RPGs. And it was because in my fourth edition game, our DM had some very real hygiene issues that bugged me to the point where I was like, you know what? I don't think I like RPGs. And so I got really, really into board games. You can kind of see behind me. I liked the really heavy tactical board games, like the I don't know if you can call them war games, because I'm not sure if your guys' definition of war games is like diplomacy war games or if it's like Warhammer, one-on-one tactical war games. I'm not really sure. But I liked the big, like Twilight Imperium, or diplomacy, like the big war games where everybody was their own country, Megasiv, stuff like that. And you're negotiating with each other. And at the same time, you're building up your own army and everybody's got like fog of war, different information that they're going off of. I loved that stuff. So that's kind of, and if this, I don't know if you wanted to segue into this topic, but that's kind of what drew me to, I guess you could call a lot of the bro SR types, is they seem to come at it from that same perspective. And I really like that perspective. And for a long time, I thought that that wasn't really compatible with D&D because D&D was a small party game where like you're going with, everybody has their own character and you're going through a dungeon. And while there is some tactics there, a lot of it's role play and theater stuff, but there's not really a whole lot of faction stuff. And that's kind of what drew me to a lot of the BroSR. I like the idea of bringing that into the game and giving each individual player some more control than just my character, but my character, their retainers, their army, their like the faction they're associated with, making decisions for that. I love that idea. And that's something that kind of drew me to those types. And that's why I ended up following a lot of people like Dundermoose, who is here on Twitter, just to see more of that and how people incorporate that sort of thing into their games.
Yep. Yeah. And this is really interesting to me. I guess kind of as a brief tangent off of that, what were your thoughts when you saw or have you seen Secrets of Blackmoor?
I have seen half of it.
Okay.
I've seen the first half of it.
Because one of the things that blew me away when I saw that movie, I had never seen D&D played that way or anything kind of similar to D&D played in that manner. And to hear that this was kind of the immediate ancestor of D&D, like this was basically D&D's grandfather that these guys were playing, that really interested me. And that's kind of what got me thinking a little bit more about the game in tactical terms. But it's always, ever since I've gotten into this sphere, it's fascinated me how many people really are looking for this more tactical diplomacy style of game. But the fact of the matter is, like, the mainstream RPG conversation almost has no interest in serving this to people who want it.
Yeah. Oh God, I have to think about that. Yeah, the modern stuff doesn't really have a whole lot for people who want larger scale play, for sure. I agree with that. I don't know that I have much to add. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's kind of an interest, I think, in the newer stuff in having like a, God, they're so linear. Man, the ones I have read recently are so linear, the WotC books. But I think there's stuff out there for it, but I'm kind of having to dig through the internet and find, like, currently I am reading, God, this is the most disjointed answer you ever for your question. I apologize. I don't even know what your question was, but like currently I'm reading like Borromaze, which is an old thing, but I don't know. What was the question?
I mean, the big question was, I guess when you, like when you looked into kind of the mainstream side of the conversation, because everyone who gets back into role-playing or got back into role-playing at a certain point encountered pretty quickly, like the Critical Role crowd, the 5e crowd.
Yeah.
And those people just don't seem interested at all in even considering that there's a different style of play that's more tactical, that's more focused on large scale scenarios and building up rather than just kind of staying an itinerant murder hobo or something like that.
Yeah.
Who has a funny accent.
Yeah. There's like this weird trend in, I guess it's not even a trend because it's been around for so long. Like when you look online for tips for DMing, like if you're a brand new DM and you get on Twitter or you get on whatever site to look for tips, Reddit especially, don't get on Reddit, but if you get on Reddit to like look at tips for new DMing, it's like make sure your players stick to what you want them to do, prepare ahead of time, prepare exactly what you want your players to do. If your players are going off and doing this, make sure they're interested in playing the type of game that you want to run. Don't just go ahead and tell them your expectation is that you follow the adventure. Like that's the actual kind of DMing advice that's out there, but it's, I don't know. It's really, there's a lot of really bad advice out there. And oh God, the fudging, don't even get me into the fudging debate. Cause like that's the type of advice out there. Like, just, man, ooh, I'm getting excited about this. They have advice for DMs starting out, like, get your players on this linear path. And really, it's easier than you think to run a sandbox. Mm-hmm. It's easier than you think to give your players more power over the game than just their character. I was amazed at how easy this was. Like, it sounded way above me. It sounded like way too hard to do, to let my players have more say in the campaign than like their individual character.
Mm-hmm.
But when I actually did it, it was easier. It took work off me.
Yeah.
I was amazed at how easy it was to run a sandbox, let my players run things. It really takes a load off the DM. Mm-hmm. And oh gosh, sorry, I looked over at the chat. I got behind. That's okay. I don't have to read it.
But yeah, the thing that you're getting at there, it's one of the more interesting things that like Mr. Wargaming John Mollison and Dunder Moose and Jeffro and uh-huh. B-Dubs talk about is this idea of prep addiction.
Yeah.
So much of this advice basically encourages you towards prep addiction. And then you get this problem that I think is essentially 100% the reason why there's GM burnout. You've got GMs who are like, well, I thought this was cool. My players don't care at all about this. And I've built the entire adventure around this thing that I thought was cool that they don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way to deal with that is don't prep all this crap. Let the players get themselves into trouble and then have the world react naturally to what they're doing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've grown to do. Like, I had a player ask me before the start of a campaign once, like, who's the BBEG? And I'm like, I don't know yet. Like, we'll figure it out. Whoever you antagonize, I guess.
And it's yeah. Greg Gillespie in chat here actually makes a good point. You move past prep addiction with experience. Like, that's
yeah.
It seems like the easiest thing in the world for a new GM to not prep at all, but the reality of the situation is they're the ones who are going to prep literally everything.
Yeah.
My first session I GM'd, I wrote actual dialogue that NPCs would say, literally a script for myself. Like, it was bad.
I've done that. Mm-hmm. Oh God, I've done that. Oh, I cringe now thinking about it. Like, I used to like rehearse this stuff. No. Oh, I hate that I thought about that. Thanks for bringing back that memory.
I'm sorry.
But I think right now I'm actually starting to run. Oh God, I got an idea. I say I got an idea. I stole an idea from Alchemic Raker, who I really, really like. I think he's full of great ideas.
Raker's a cool dude.
He is. I watched your interview with him. I think it was yours. I watched him on somewhere.
I had him mm-hmm. and Gelatinous Rube on at the same time talking about a Matt Colville stream.
I think that was it. I think I watched that. But I really like Alchemic Raker. He's one of my favorites on Twitter. But he had an idea in like December-ish that I bookmarked and I've quote tweeted him like 5 times on it. He's probably like tired of me now. but about like a battle. Bronstein, is it, or is it Bronstein? I don't even
Bronstein,
know.
I've heard
the word said Bronstein. Yeah, Battle Bronstein, with like where the players have like gods that they're working on. And I'm actually running that now. Mm-hmm. And just straight off ripped off his idea, which I know that's why I put it out there, so I don't feel bad. But it's working pretty well so far. Actually, one of the players has been in chat, so I don't want to say too much, but it's gone very well.
I'm also working on something with a Battle Bronstein in mind. Nighthaven, which is the setting that I'm working in, it's a city setting, and it's very focused on gangs. And so I'm trying to adapt the Battle Bronstein into a system where players can take a break from their characters and basically play out turf wars to determine like who controls what parts of the city.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing, it works really well. I don't know. Mine's still going, so I'm not actually sure. Because I think Alchemic Raker said the first session, and I'm like, all right, let's just stretch this to a month long because I enjoy this stuff. And so far, it's gone pretty well. And by that, I mean, I have never seen so much talk in between games as I am seeing with this. The chat is constantly going. I have players in voice chat at like every single day, like conspiring with each other saying, all right, so I'm making this thing right here and you better not touch this thing. Like they're constantly involved and like they know more of what's going on than I do right now, which is actually a problem that I need to fix. But it's wild how invested they are when they are making the world, when they're creating everything. Mm. And I told them that I intend for it to go with multiple GMs. And if the players go into an area that you know more about than anyone else, you are free to run this area and I will play a PC. So Yeah, I have one player that made like spider people. He has like the spider god and he made spider people and he's like, he called them the arachno capitalists. He's like, yeah, it's bad.
As someone who has read their fair share of Rothbard, that's hilarious.
I'm glad you think so. I loved it too. Right. But there's like all sorts of stuff going on. It's wild. Hmm. Anyway.
But the interesting thing about that with this idea of the Battle Bronstein or even the Bronstein in general, for so long, I was chasing this dragon of the immersive game, which was basically just, you know, me soliloquizing in some kind of accent that I put on and trying to impose this backstory that I wrote for my character onto this world. But what I found, and this is actually something that Black Lodge Games has articulated better than I have, when you put people in these tactical situations, you kind of take the story aspect off the table and you just give people, here's the tactical reality of the situation that these characters are in. You all have to now deal with each other. That's where like real immersive role play comes in and where people kind of start to take on this actor style thinking of like what their character wants, what their character needs, and even like essentially aligning their wants and desires with those of this character that they just rolled up at the beginning of the session. And so it's really interesting to see how the tactical side and the like story theater kid side, they aren't actually opposed. They fit rather well together. You just have to commit to it.
Yeah, I think they do. And like I said, at first when I started playing D&D back when I was like 18, I thought anyone who, I think the first time I heard somebody get into the voice of their character like that, I was like 23, 24. I thought he was weird, but anyway, it's not like that though. And I will say the less I focus on making a story as a GM, the less I focus on the story, the better the story is. Because the players do it just fine. They can do all the story stuff. I've kind of gotten to where I think that my responsibility when I'm GMing is just rules arbitration and filling out the world, telling the players what's there. And like never mind, I won't get into that. But sometimes the players will tell me what's there. Like I don't even have to. I don't even have to roll on the table. They're like, I bet that's a bullet. And I was like, yeah. But anyway, you asked me a question, didn't you? I'm sorry, I'm bad at interviews.
No, I just kind of like made a point off of what you were saying, and it's all good. I do have a question for you, though. Mm-hmm. To kind of switch gears here, there's a lot of interesting conversation going on around this tactical aspect of play. There's a renewed interest in simulationism, thanks largely in part to people like Alexander McCreese. But a lot of these conversations that are happening are, at least in my opinion, and as someone who actively participates in these conversations, they're happening on the fringe. They're happening amongst groups of people who are seen as either a little odd by the RPG cognoscenti, or in some cases, like, dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
When you stumbled upon this, side of the conversation, when you entered this space, what were your thoughts on some of the figures that you were interacting with? Did you have a perception that, like, this was kind of a fringe thing that, let's be blunt here, weirdos were participating in?
That's such an interesting question. I've never let people tell me who to interact with. I don't do that. I don't block people indiscriminately. I like to listen to what people are saying, and I never let people tell me what someone else believes. I just like to listen to what people say and judge based on that. And I think that there's a wide variety of figures having these discussions. I think a lot of them you could lump into the bro-SR category, which isn't like a bad thing for me. I like a lot of those guys, if not most of them. I mean, they're pretty cool. They've helped me a lot. I've mentioned Alchemic Raker, Crossface, Dundermoose. Who else? Even Jeffro. And some of the others who I can't even remember their names now. I'm blanking. But they've been very helpful to me on a lot of things. But like I said, I don't let people tell me who to interact with and who not to. I never thought anyone was weird here or fringe or anything like that. Black Lodge Games is good. Is he bro-SR? I don't know if he's bro-SR or not.
Black Lodge Games, he's kind of where I am. He's bro-friendly. I don't know if you know this. I don't actually consider myself bro-SR. I don't know if they consider me bro-SR. I like the bros. I like a lot of what they have to say. My whole thing right now is I don't want to be part of anyone's movement.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of the same. I thought they were in the same game group because they have like blogs about
they
it.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them are. And like, nobody's ever invited me to that game group, and I don't want an invite. It's a fraternity. They're allowed to have their fraternities. That's fine. I just like a lot of their stuff that they put out because they have a lot of good ideas that I've copied, and that's why they put them out there. They want people to copy them.
Yeah.
So yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
I was listing off some great guys here. Brand Lakage.
I actually don't know most of those, so. I might have seen some of those names. I'm not sure.
Saint Dude's a cool guy. Macho Mandolph. He's a legend.
Man, I sure feel like I don't know anybody now. The ones I interact with that I think are bro-SR are Dundermoose. Is Crimson Jester bro-SR or is he not? I don't think he is.
I don't know.
Maybe Rule of Thule is pretty cool. I like that guy.
Thule's cool.
Yeah, I mentioned Crossface. I really like Crossface and Alchemic Rakers. Those guys are great. I don't interact with Mr. Wargaming has me blocked.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, John, and, come on.
To be fair, I don't think I've ever interacted with him. But to be fair, I was probably annoying and I probably deserved it, but I don't know. To be fair to him, but like he wants to unblock me, we can be friends. If not, that's cool too. Anyway, yeah, I don't have a problem with any of these people.
Yeah.
They're cool.
But yeah, the thing.
Oh yeah. Gelatinous Rube. Sorry.
Yes. Gelatinous Rube. Yeah.
How can I forget him? Oh, and Winston, is Winston bro-SR? Okay, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. He's cool. Go on. I'm sorry.
What about Wigma? Because Wigma can be one of those guys. I love Wigma. He's a great dude. He can be one of those guys who's kind of prickly, though. Have you interacted much with him?
I don't think so. I don't. That the name doesn't ring a bell. Yeah, I don't know him at all.
But yeah, the reason why I asked that question, I think there's a lot of cool conversations happening in these spheres. And I think there's a lot that people could learn from listening to people like Jeffro. Even if you don't agree with everything that Jeffro says, you can learn a lot about gaming by listening to him. You can learn a lot from Mr. Wargaming, even if you never want to play like any of the, you know, classic war games, or you never want to play AD&D first edition. There's a lot of interesting little bits and pieces that can be pulled from everyone in these spaces. There's lots of people like Viktor Gorchev who are making really weird, interesting modern fantasy, like 80s action movie role-playing games that are really cool and really taking on like underserved markets. There's people like Crafty Matt who are just trying to get people to read the damn books that they bought.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much good stuff to be found here.
Yeah.
And I wish people would do what you did and let these folks speak for themselves. Because yeah, like there's the kayfabe. There's, you know, overt religious, not proselytizing, but like Jeffro's going to say things like only Christians really understand role-playing games. And I think he has a point there, but
really
there's also like good stuff to be found in there. We can talk a little bit about that, but I'm just
curious. I don't have an argument against it. I just like to hear the argument. I don't think I've seen that one. But that's okay. But maybe not for now. I can look that up on my own time.
About that. Because the thing, I mean, I'm going to talk about it now. The thing that interests me about kind of that outlook in medieval fantasy, or it really just like the medieval period at all, you have this heavy presence of the Catholic Church. It is literally the culture machine of the Middle Ages. It is the engine that drives basically literacy throughout the Middle Ages. If you are a learned person, you're probably a priest or a monk of some variety. And so in medieval fantasy, that aspect becomes very important. How do you handle the presence of the Catholic Church? And this is where, like, this is why the priest is one of the three core classes in original D&D, because you have to have this element that's present in medieval fantasy because it was essential to medieval life. You also have these systems of alignment where good and evil, or law and chaos, depending on your interpretation of the alignment system, are supernatural forces that are doing battle against each other. This is a very Christian way to look at things.
Okay.
Basically, the entire frame of D&D fantasy is built on this Christian idea, and it comes from Michael Moorcock. Michael Moorcock would reject the notion that it's Christian, but it is. Like, this is where the idea comes from. Same with Paul Anderson, Three Hearts, Three Lions. The way that he lays out alignment, it all fits within the framework of Christianity. And so when you understand Christianity, and especially when you believe Christianity the way so many of us do, things start to slide into place a little bit more and slide mm-hmm. into focus a little bit more. And you can really kind of latch onto these concepts of good and evil being forces at war with each other. Even if you take the viewpoint that I do, that evil is not a thing in and of itself. It is merely, it's a lack of something. So it's, it's basically life fighting off the tendency of decay. And that's the struggle of good versus evil. That's where I think Christians have a leg up on other people for understanding fantasy role playing. And that's why I'm not one who's going to go, come on now, when Jeffro says only Christians can understand role-playing games. Like that, when you think about it, as he does, Jeffro says things in like the harshest, bluntest way possible to get a point across.
Yeah.
But he's making a very salient point.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining the argument to me. It's there's a lot of stuff there. I think you have, I think there's a really good point there, just because if you see, as you see like WotC and companies with, where they're obviously, they don't have a Christian focus and they're getting away a lot from D&D's roots. That's when you start to see the alignment chart just go by the wayside and villains that are kind of sexy and kind of, I don't want to say interesting, but intriguing to players where they might have an actual point in the world, or at least the way the campaign's written. So I can kind of see what you mean there, definitely. And I say this as I don't know if the audience needs to know this. I'm not a Christian myself. I grew up Christian. I have a lot of respect for it. I have a very Christian worldview, but at the same time, I'm not really a Christian. But I can definitely see that, because I definitely see where the alignment erodes over time, and how things have really changed. I don't want to say, I guess it like glamorizes now more evil characters, or characters that would be evil in past editions, like tieflings, for example, are cute and bubbly and, you know, great for players. When I don't think, when were they introduced? Like third edition, something like that? Were they in second edition? I don't know.
I think they might have showed up in second edition when Planescape came out, but they were like fully brought in as a player race in third or 3.5, if I'm not mistaken.
But yeah, I don't know that I agree with that argument of, I think it's very blunt and catch-all. The only Christians can play D&D. I don't think I agree with that, but at the same time, I'm not sure if I am learned enough to fully articulate why. And I think it's an interesting point that I would need to look into it a little bit more. But I definitely see where the argument's coming from. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Well, two things. One, what's the cat's name that just walked by?
That is Persephone.
Hi, Persephone.
She's not friendly. She won't say hi.
My cats are not allowed in here while I'm in here, because Ronan will jump up on my keyboard and just sit here.
Well, my house is like one big room, so they go where they please.
That's fair. But it's interesting. You bring up this idea of kind of the sexy villain, or the villain that has a point about the world. I kind of want to dig into this a little bit, if you'll indulge me here a little bit. What is it about those villains that's particularly appealing to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't use those. Not really any. So I was using that as an example of how D&D has really gotten away from its roots, because I agree that it definitely has roots that are very Christian in nature. And I was using that as an example of how it's gotten away from its roots, because I don't really do the sexy villains. Mm. Like, not at all.
Fair.
My villains are bad, bad people. Yeah, no, that's not me.
From
Planescape?
Professor Dungeon Master himself. Tieflings came with Planescape, and they became a thing in fourth edition. There we go.
Third.
There we go.
Is this a Mandela effect? I remember having a tiefling in my group in third. Maybe it wasn't a tiefling. Mm. Yeah, that's a bad question for me, though, because I don't really do the sexy villains.
And my whole thing with that, I think there is a problem in modern fiction. You see this in comic books too, where people are so obsessed with the villains because they understand the villain's worldview better than the hero's worldview. So yeah. many people just see a villain as this is a person unconstrained by their ego. Like, this is a person who does not have any kind of moral constraints on them. They are creatures of pure id. They can act as they see fit. They're Nietzschean Ubermenches, to really layer on the philosophy speak. Mm-hmm. And they allow writers who don't want to have to deal with the fact that being good is difficult. They just let them kind of run wild. And so a lot of the heroes are very kind of impotent in the face of dealing with these villains. And a lot of the, you know, dealing with villains in modern media involves basically acknowledging that the villain was wronged in some way. And that even though they're going about things the wrong way, they're doing so from a place of being hurt. And can't you see how hurt they are and how this is all really our fault, not theirs? Whereas I think interesting villains are... They're evil. They are unconstrained by any kind of morality, but they are showing how when a virtue is taken away, when you drop virtuous behavior, essentially your life spirals out of control and you turn into a monster. So, I look at someone like Judge Holden in Blood Meridian. Judge Holden is Satan, pretty much. He seems to know everything. He seems to have lived for hundreds of years, and he seems to know what everyone's vice is and how to get them to indulge in that vice.
Yeah.
And the only way to overcome the judge is to not give in. But, you know, the protagonist of Blood Meridian gives in. The people in his unit all give in. And so really, like, the only way to overcome this evil that is Judge Holden is to not give in to all of the all of the good that he seems to offer, all the temptation that he offers with his like awe-inspiring presence. And so it's, to me, that's an interesting villain. And a villain is nothing without the hero, because the hero shows how, you know, there is this sense of, you know, but for the grace of God go I. You have to use a villain to challenge a hero's moral compass and have them ultimately overcome that. So, that's kind of my thoughts. We do have a question here in chat.
I see it
along the same lines.
From it's a good question.
Gelatinous Room.
That's so contextual. Mm-hmm. I think that there has definitely been a trend, back to kind of what you were saying, Ryan. I'm thinking about Gelatinous Rube's question here, because I'm not good at answering this one on the fly. This one's going to take some thought. But to what you were saying, I think there has been kind of a societal shift where we no longer value things like self-restraint, self-control. And those things are not considered good things anymore. It's a denial of your true self is what people think it is now. And if people think that being true to themselves is like doing whatever you want all of the time. And so when you have villains that are, when you have villains that are villains because they give in to their id, as you said, it kind of makes them sympathetic figures in society now, it seems, just because we no longer really value that. We no longer value self-control to an extent. Mm-hmm. As to villains doing some good or having a point, I mean, I think I'm sure everybody does good on the side at some point. Like there is, I don't know if it's possible to make a villain that is truly evil through and through without ever having a shred of sympathy attached to them. Like that's not what makes a villain, you know? In Are we talking about in RPGs or just in general?
I'd say in general, we can get into the question of villains in RPGs because
I was talking about RPGs, but
that's
I don't know. But I mean, I think that's pretty much every villain. For some media, it would be a cheap play for sympathy, but the question's so contextual. Can good deeds unmake evil? No, I don't think so. You can do as much good as you want, and it doesn't undo an evil deed you did. I don't know. That's where I stand.
But. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put things. Can you unmake evil? Because I believe in atonement as a Christian, but mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, what you do can never be undone. So even if you do repent, even if you do turn away from your wicked ways, you've still hurt people and you can't undo that hurt. So it always kind of follows you around, and it always sits in the back of your mind as I did this thing to people. And so, yeah, there really is no undoing evil. There's only being forgiven and then working to overcome that side of your nature, or to, you know, draw yourself closer to God, or draw yourself closer to morality, however you want to frame it. I know some people take issue with me framing everything around Christianity, so I'll throw that out there.
I mean, certainly you can be forgiven, but that does not undo the evil thing that you did. It doesn't undo it for the people affected by it, is kind of what I'm saying. And does a villain in an RPG, if they ask for atonement and forgiveness, does that undo their villainy? Well, that's up to the players. I don't know. That's not a moral question that I am qualified to answer.
And this is something to get us back strictly into the realm of RPGs. You know, we talk about villains. I kind of want your thoughts on this. Approaching the game in a more open-ended manner, do you think RPGs have or should have explicit villains, or do they merely have the antagonists who react harshly to the players' actions?
The best villains I have run were ones that were made on the fly. Like, I had a player that assassinated a guy, and then his family went after them, and that ended up the campaign. Was them versus like this powerful family who knew they assassinated one of their members but couldn't prove it. That was completely player driven. I don't plan villains in advance really anymore. The players do that themselves.
And that's kind of like that's where I land now as well, because when, again, it's the same thing with prep addiction. You set up something that you think is so terribly evil. You set up this this villain who you're like, oh, this is the worst guy ever. This is the this is the Austrian painter of my world. And your players end up like interacting with this guy and becoming best friends with him. And they hate the they hate like the paladin that you put in to kind of be like their mentor in the light. They're like, we really hate that paladin dude, but we really like this this evil king that you put in there. We want to work for him. Yeah. When you try to set people up in advance as heroes and villains, you are kind of taking away from how the players interact with your world. Yeah. And so I think it behooves game masters to allow the players to create their own villains.
Certainly. My players are wonderful at creating their own villains. My players went to a poor woman's house and abducted her child because she couldn't pay a 25 gold debt. They have a 4-year-old half-orc boy with them now. I don't know what to do with that. I could never have planned something like that. They just wanted to do it. I was like, all right, guys, what do you want to do? We got, you know, you guys got to... So some guy wants you to go to the Dragon's Lair. There's like a mega dungeon here. There's like all sorts of stuff. What do you want to do? Wait, the old PC owed me 25 gold. let's go shake down his widow. So so that's the campaign now. Like I can't plan that. They mm-hmm. did that.
Yep.
You know,
sometimes the players make themselves the villain.
Yeah. Now CPS is the villain.
Yep.
Fantasy CPS.
Fantasy CPS.
That's. It got dumb. I'm sorry.
It's all right. Like, no, and that's what's interesting about running RPGs in this way. There's this really bad Matt Colville video that I watched one time, and I know I've probably done too much crapping on Matt Colville recently. He made this video recommending that to make your villains a persistent threat, you quite literally cut away from what your players are doing and like show them essentially Lord Zedd from Power Rangers talking to Goldar and Rita Repulsa about like how their evil plans are being thwarted by the Rangers.
That's terrible. Don't do that.
And it like, it was not, I was not into that. When he brought that up, like I was not into that. That it was the worst thing I'd ever heard. You're showing players something that they would have no knowledge of.
No,
it was horrible.
Dude, running horrible. A cut scene in an RP, that's so cringy.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm glad I've never done that. I've rehearsed villain speeches before, like back when I was like brand new to it. I've never run a cut scene in an RPG, and I'm very proud to say that.
Mm-hmm. They're all mashing so the X bad. Button trying to skip the cutscene. Yeah. Exactly, Gunner Moose.
I have one player that if I would ever go on too long with an NPC, he'd be like, skip dialogue. Okay. All right, we're gone. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
Gelatinous Rube, yes. We can have you and me can have a conversation on here at some point about MCDM. I understand you have thoughts on that differ from mine. So we'll talk about that.
But yeah, he has a good point with magic dreams, visions, stuff like that. Yeah, you can work it in, send it to the player privately, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I always feel like the less time I spend talking during a game I'm running, the better it's going. So as a general rule.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's... I think that's kind of the call of the game master that a lot of people have forgotten. At some point, you have to pull yourself back from pull yourself back from direct involvement and become basically a referee. The players will drive their own conflicts. They will have, there will be circumstances where instead of going after Fantasy CPS in the game world where you have to be the Fantasy CPS agent, maybe one of them will have a conflict with another player at the table over this child, and now they're going at it with each other. They're you know, directly fighting it out amongst themselves, and at that point you don't have to control a villain. People are going to start taking sides, and you just have to arbitrate the exchange there.
Yeah, that would be amazing if that happened. If there was a single player character in that campaign with any sort of moral compass, I imagine it would happen. And I would certainly have loved if that was the resolution, and the resolution was not, let's take this kid and put him in as much danger as possible so that the DM will give us extra XP for getting him out of danger. But no. What I'm trying to say is that would have been an amazing thing that they certainly could have done if any of them are watching. I don't think they are, but you know. Right. Yeah. Alignment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it. I didn't have a statement to make about that. I was just repeating the word alignment as if I did. Go on.
But this is another one of those concepts that I feel like has unfairly become a fringe talking point, because you know, for better or for worse, kind of the mainstream outlook on alignment is that it's unnecessary. People are like, why is this system in here? You know, why can't you just let players, you know, make whatever choices they make in the situation? But the fact of the matter is alignment dictates how certain characters will act in certain situations.
Yeah.
Again, with Dundermoose here, a 1E paladin doesn't play good. He can lose his powers. Yeah. So, you know, if you are okay with kidnapping a child because of a debt of 25 gold pieces, congratulations, your paladin's a fighter now.
There were no paladins in that group. I think everyone deserves to know. Yeah. No paladins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think alignment's actually very important. I use it for the main thing I use alignment for is while people are creating characters, I kind of tell them to coordinate their alignments. I don't mind running an evil game. I don't mind running a good game. I will run whatever they want to play, but I like them to coordinate their alignments with each other just so they kind of know what kind of group they're making. Now, if there is some group conflict, that's great. I like group conflict as long as it stays like in the game and not above the game, right? So it kind of depends on the group, but I think alignment's a very good tool for kind of coordinating the group just a little bit and seeing what exactly to expect. But also, yeah, I enforce alignment changes. I remember I had a lawful good character who said he wanted to leave the head of somebody's dead wife and outside of his door and then knock and run. And I said, what is your alignment again? And he said, I'm changing it now, DM. But yeah. So, I mean, there's that.
This is one of the interesting aspects of old school gaming that's been lost. In the olden days, and I don't remember what edition this changed with, but I think it was there even up through second edition. If you changed alignment, you lost a level.
Interesting. I actually didn't know that one. Oh, I like that. I didn't know that, though, that I learned something.
It was one of those things. It's kind of like, you know, with a paladin, you lose your powers if you don't act within, you know, your lawful alignment. In a lot of cases, in old school games, if you acted out of the chosen alignment, you lost a level because it represented some kind of shift in your thinking, your behavior, and now you have to you basically regress a little bit and have to progress on a different path with this new alignment if you're gonna like continue to act that way.
That's interesting. I actually did not know that. I really like that rule. And if you get any rude Twitter comments in the next week or so from accounts you don't know, they're probably my players. Just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that would affect one group pretty badly, actually. It won't like that. But yeah, I actually like that rule. I didn't know of it. Hmm.
But I do want to challenge you on something. Because I was always like this too. I wanted my groups to be kind of, I wanted their alignments to align. I wanted them mm-hmm. to have compatible alignments. But
yeah,
I've kind of evolved in my thinking on this. And to explain, are you familiar at all with Berserk?
Maybe.
The manga series or
okay.
The anime
been made on? As a general rule, no on anime. I don't watch any anime, so no.
I also don't generally watch anime. Berserk is an exception, because mm-hmm. Berserk is amazing. Highly recommend.
Okay.
But in Berserk, you have this kind of main group of characters called the Band of the Hawk. And they're a band of mercenaries. Within the Band of the Hawk, you have split alignments. You've got Guts, who in my mind is basically true neutral, maybe even chaotic neutral. And he's the main character. Then you have Griffith. Griffith, without giving too much away, is very much lawful evil. He he does some things that basically his entire life's goal is the pursuit of his own power. And so he very, very easily falls within the lawful evil category. And then also within the band, you've got people like Casca, who is Guts, the protagonist's love interest. She's very much chaotic good, but she is enamored with this lawful evil Griffith character. And eventually this goes very badly for everyone involved. Again, without spoiling anything. But for a while, this is a coherent unit. Like for years and years, they're the most successful mercenary company in the kingdom. So there is this adventuring party with a split alignment within it that adventures together. However, eventually these goals are no longer aligned with each other. And that's when bodies start dropping and people start betraying each other. And that's where you get into this, this notion of PvP and domain play with players, building separate domains and having conflict with each other. It's an interesting thing to do. As long as everyone like knows what's up and is not going to get like butthurt over it.
Yeah.
You can do some really interesting things with a split party that begins together and then drifts apart very dramatically. So sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to respond to what you said. I thought you were done. I'm sorry.
Go for
it. So you've said nothing that I disagree with.
Okay.
I think if I am running for a new group that I don't really know the people too well, I'm going to kind of insist that their alignments are kind of matching up. However, if I am running for my friends, which I also do, they're my favorite people to run for, I love that sort of thing. They can handle PvP. They can handle betraying each other. They can handle this stuff because they know each other. No one's going to get butthurt. Everybody's really excited when this stuff happens. They make for wonderful dramatic moments when they do, and they're entirely player driven. I don't have anything to do with these moments, except sometimes they'll message me and let me know what's happening. But I mean, player driven plot points, especially when it comes with group intrigue from having different alignments or different goals, those are the greatest moments in a campaign. I would never argue against that. Sometimes when I'm running, if I don't know everyone in the group and I'm kind of feeling them out a little bit, yeah, I'll kind of say, you know, coordinate with each other. If you can't handle, just kind of figure out what you can handle and coordinate your alignments. They don't all have to be the same, but, you know, if you guys are basically good aligned, maybe nobody play chaotic evil. If you want to blow up halflings or something, maybe only play like chaotic neutral and blow up gnomes instead. I don't know. That's just for groups that I don't know super well. For groups I know super well, like my home group, absolutely, they can do whatever they want. In fact, I want them to do whatever they want. The only problem is when I tell them that and everybody wants to be the one that is secretly evil, and then it's like that Spider-Man meme where he's like pointing at himself. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we have that problem sometimes. Mm-hmm. But you've said nothing I disagree with. I'm with you on that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Every player, especially new players, have this kind of inborn kind of gremlin that whispers to them to make their character like the center of attention, or make their character the special one. And so like you get a whole bunch of people together, and almost inevitably there's going to be multiple people who want to be the one who completely wrecks stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Double agents working from different factions. You have like, I don't know, just a lawful good temple, right? And that's the main patron of the party, but everyone's like everyone's a spy for a different faction.
That's cool. That
sounds but they all think that everyone else is like actually actually working for this lawful good temple, and they're the only spy, and it's a great setup. And in fact, like I've never run that campaign intentionally.
Are you familiar with the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith? Yeah. The Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, kind of. Or the game. Are you familiar with the board game Spyfall?
I've heard of it. I've never You've heard played of it.
Okay. All right. We won't go into it, but it's like kind of that situation where, except everyone's a spy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun setup.
But it, like the chaos gamer, the one who always wants to break stuff, that comes to the table and wants to like blow up halflings or something like that. That's another thing that I've kind of evolved on. I used to be the kind of person who would say, if you're going to do that, don't show up to my table. Now it's, are you willing to accept the consequences of playing like that? If yes, come on. If not, then don't show up. Because so many, like, you see so many people like that who are, they don't want the consequences of the actions. They just want to be goofy and zany. And when you say, all right, now you're the most wanted man in the entire realm, and you know, like every paladin in 100 miles is coming after you, they get butthurt. And it's the difference between players who want to do that and understand the consequences and want to do it anyway, and the players who just want a meme.
Yeah. And it can make for great stories, but like, you have to explore the consequences of those actions when they come up. And sometimes they're going to affect the whole party. Sometimes they're not, depending on how many halflings you've exploded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I run for a very, very evil group, and I'm happy to run for them. They know there will be consequences. They've been to jail. They've paid fines. They've been executed. They're fine. They come with a backup character and clean up their previous character's mistakes and then make them worse. Like that's, I mean, and I'm happy to run for that group. I have a whole lot of fun with that group. Like my two favorite groups of all time that I've run for were that group and my lawful good group that would do absolutely nothing wrong. And oh boy, they were just as fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's kind of, for me, it's just about coordinating with a group, like what you're doing, right? I don't know.
All right. So, any of Harmony's players who are watching out there, I have a challenge for you. Force Harmony into a TPK via capital punishment. Group hanging. That's what you should go happened. For. TPK via capital punishment. You can do it. I believe in you.
I hope they try. It will happen. Like I won't shy away from it. I don't shy away from TPKs. Anyone who follows my Twitter has definitely seen my memorial posts whenever characters die.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them do die. I roll face up. When it happens, it happens. Sometimes they just get really unlucky. Sometimes they decide to go to an adult dragon's lair at like level 4. Like I can't stop bad decisions, and I don't shield them from consequences of bad decisions, and I never will, because I feel like I'd be a bad DM if I did.
Yeah, I agree.
So I just try to run the world as best I can. I don't know. This got silly. I'm sorry. I don't know if that's what we're going for here.
Something that started out serious and then got extremely silly and then circled back around to serious. That's the arc of a D&D game. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
That's what we do here.
Yes, capital punishment is legal in the Forgotten Realms, at least in everyone I've run. And in fact, I believe it is canon. And also, there were 3 halflings that were blown up. One was a child.
Almost like 1.5 people.
Yeah. That was actually an argument they had.
We only killed 1.5 people. I love it.
That was almost word for word their argument.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's just funny that you said the same thing about that. Whew. Yeah. I don't know where to take it from here. I'm sorry.
I mean, fair enough, because we are kind of running right up against time here.
Okay.
This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you about this stuff. I'd love to have you back
on again at some point. I would love to come back on. I had a lot of fun. I was a little bit nervous because I was like thinking, I don't know that I have that much interesting to say about TTRPGs. Like, I'm not any sort of public figure. I just like to run games. I run a lot of games in my free time. That's basically it. I've been trying out some new, I guess you could call them BroSR stuff. And I mean, I've been having fun with it. I'm always trying to improve, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll listen to whoever has anything interesting to say.
And I like at the end of the day, that's the best that you can ask for from a GM is, are you going to continuously improve your craft? Are you going to try and get better and, you know, hew closer to this ideal of game that we have in our heads? Are you going to RTFM and then implement TFM?
I like what Dundermoose said here. If it works, it works. If it's crap, dunk on Jeffro. Yeah, all right. And I know you said we're running up against time, so I don't want to like bring up a whole new topic at the very end here.
Okay.
But I mean, that's something that I am planning to try once the Bronstein phase of my campaign, which, by the way, I have the best players in the world for that. Like, you guys would be envious if you met my players. They're fantastic. But as that reaches its end, I am hoping to run it with things like one-to-one time, and I'm really excited to see how it goes. And I have some players that are kind of skeptical about it, some who are more excited and some who don't care. So I don't know how it's going to go. I'm going to try and just approach it as best as I can. And we just go from week to week and see how things evolve. But I will report back on Twitter what I think of it and the pitfalls I run into. And, how it has improved my games. Because I think that the ways that it could improve my games are not immediately obvious as the cons of using it, basically. Yeah. I think, and there are a lot of pros to it. I've read a lot about it. People might be surprised. I read Jeffro's blog. I know. I know what the pros should be, and I just kind of want to play it out and see what happens. And I will be trying to report on that and as unbiased as I can, I guess. I don't know. I want it to work.
Yeah.
But so I guess I'm not unbiased because I want my game to improve. I always want it to get better. So, and if it keeps my players talking and excited about the game in between games, then I'm down for it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, sorry. I know we're running up against time, and I brought up a whole new topic.
No, it's all good.
So, okay, all right, yeah.
Cool. Well, guys, that is going to do it for Rolling Bones this evening. Once again, not to be constantly self-promoting here, but we're so close. We are so close to our goal here for Guts and Glory Volume 1. Once again, I'm going to drop the link here in chat. I hope that those of you who can will support the project. And if you can't, don't worry about it. Moral support is also accepted. T-shirted, we can reschedule anytime you want. Like I said, you're welcome back on anytime. Just don't knock out my power again. But yeah, we're so close to this, and to let everyone know what's going on with Rolling Bones next week, a guy who is in here very briefly, might even still be here, Greg Gillespie, will be back on Rolling Bones for his third appearance next week. This time we're doing something a little different. Greg is, as many of you know, somewhat of an expert on Scottish folklore and history, and so we are going to be talking about taking ideas from Scottish folklore, taking stories and conflicts from Scottish folklore and history, and implementing them at a gaming table and using them as influence for monsters, for adventures, for adventure hooks, and for things like that. So we'll be talking with Greg. Crossface, what on earth are you talking about? You are welcome back on here anytime, and I love Chris Benoit. No one clip that.
Hi, Crossface.
I love Chris Benoit, the wrestler. Chris Benoit, the human being, did horrible things. But that's why I said no one clip that. Anyway, that's put my foot in my mouth one too many times, I guess. All right. So until next time, guys, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard. Greg Gillespie will be back on next week, and I will see you guys next time.
Thanks for having me on.